Ahoy, mateys! Welcome to the GameBuoy.org video game podcast, your twice-monthly port of call for gaming news and views that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. I'm your host, Captain Spike, and with me, as always, is First Mate Slagkick.
Yarr!
Today is January 24th, 2016, and this is episode 101, Generation X-Wing, a Game Buoy spotlight on Star Wars games. Welcome again, our lovely and beautiful listener, to another episode of the GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
GameBuoy.org video game podcast.
This week, we're going to switch up our usual spotlight on format, and we're just going to talk about some of our favorite Star Wars games with you for a little while, highlight some of the most notoriously bad ones while we're at it. So buckle in and get ready for that. But first, our usual slate of follow-ups and news bits. Slaggy, you want to get us started?
Yeah, our first follow-up comes in the form of the producer of Theater Rhythm, Ichiro Hazama-san, speaking about the future of the series to Nintendo Dream. He said, this is Hazama from Square Enix. Last year at this place, I said, we'll keep continuing Theater Rhythm from hereafter too. Well then, I wonder about next year. Personally, I still want to continue, and every day I have been devising various plans. I'm full with a feeling to do something to make it happen, so I'll be glad if you can wait with anticipation. With that being said, please keep supporting the series as usual from hereafter too.
That is fantastic news.
Indeed, those are some great games.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Theater Rhythm games. You know, I know that Dragon Quest Theater Rhythm came out in Japan last March. It unfortunately hasn't yet come to North American shores. I haven't given up hope yet, but I also hope the series continues. You know, we obviously could still use like a Chrono Theater Rhythm.
Oh, wow.
A Kingdom Hearts Theater Rhythm. A Nier Theater Rhythm.
Well, Kingdom Hearts Theater Rhythm would have to have some sort of plot involved.
All right. It's hard to believe that they would just do a Theater Rhythm game for Kingdom Hearts without it having an elaborate storyline.
Of course.
Double crosses. Some people are going to die and come back as someone else. It'd be a whole thing. Anyway, we also have word that Sega has announced in Japan that the Phantasy Star Online 2 closed beta test for the PS4 version of the game will run from February 25th to March 6th. The official release date in Japan is set for April 20th, so this is probably stress testing and stuff. Either way, you know, we're hoping it goes well, and we are still holding out hopes that the PS4 version of the game will come to North America.
We'll see. For Blaze Blue Central Fiction fans, they'll be happy to know that the arcade update coming on January 28th will add the character Hades Izanami as playable for the first time. This character had been in the ending of Continuum Shift and was a boss from Chrono Phantasma, so more details about like how she actually plays in Central Fiction will be remaining to be seen.
Indeed. We also have word here that Mario and Sonic at the Rio 2016 Olympic Games will be releasing on March 18th for 3DS. The Wii U version is currently still slated to be released later this year. We also have release date news here on Guilty Gear Xrd Revelator. That'll be hitting on consoles, specifically PS3 and PS4, in Japan on May 26th, including a new character, Kamehyun. And this game will be releasing in North America, quite excitedly, 2 weeks later on June 7th. So that's definitely something to be very excited about. And it is confirmed that Kamehyun will be available as a first print copy character. So, you know, he'll be a DLC character, and a code will come with that for people who are early adopters on the game.
Excellent.
And Slag, you want to take this last release date news?
Yes, Pokken Tournament's release date worldwide is March 18th. So
that's for the Wii U port of the game?
Yes, so not too far to go for that.
Excellent. Very, very excited. You know, we're seeing a lot of stuff starting to pop up for the Pokemon 20th anniversary, and I get the feeling that this is going to be, for a lot of people, like, the first real thing, you know, that they pick up in the spirit of that.
Pokemon Z! We need a Pokemon Z announcement.
And with that having been said, Slaggy, unless you have anything else, I think it's time for some news.
Oh my god!
News. 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 Oh my god. News.
First up here, we have the very, very, very exciting news that Spike Chunsoft is releasing PC ports of Danganronpa and Danganronpa 2 coming to Steam. And further from that, we also have word out of Spike Chunsoft that there are future plans for more PC releases, both in this series and in their other series. So, you know, this is very exciting. Obviously, I want everyone who hasn't had a chance to play Danganronpa yet, but wants to have a chance to play this. And also, hey, more Spike Chunsoft games on the PC platform. That'll be great.
Yeah.
We also have word here that LEGO Marvel's Avengers will be getting free DLC exclusively for the PS4 and PS3 platforms. This is going to be a 9-character pack that is called the Captain America Civil War character pack. It's going to come with movie skin, like new costume skins based on the movie versions of Captain America, Iron Man, Black Panther, Winter Soldier, Falcon, War Machine, Scarlet Witch, and Crossbones in Agent 13.
Oh, wow.
It's also going to come with free platform-exclusive DLC of an Ant-Man film character and level pack.
Cute.
So it will include an all-new level based on the film and movie version costumes for Ant-Man, the Scott Lang version, Ant-Man the Hank Pym version, Anthony, which was, you know, the giant ant in the movie. Well, I guess the regular size ant in the movie. Cassie Lang, Darren Cross, Scott Lang, Hank Pym, Hope Van Dyne, Luis, The Wasp, and Yellow Jacket. So that's really, really, really exciting to have all of this exclusive content and free
content.
And none
for Xbox.
Is just, you know, it kind of sucks for Xbox buyers, as Slaggy was saying, but it's going to be really cool to have all this content.
Yeah, well, you might be relieved to know that regardless of what console you own, everyone will be able to enjoy the upcoming King of Fighters anime and live action film.
Oh man.
These will be getting North American releases, so even though you didn't ask for them and you wanted Phantasy Star Online 2, North America, you're getting King of Fighters anime and live action.
Whoa!
You know, I actually just picked up the old King of Fighters live action movie.
You're proud of admitting that?
Well, my local used record store had a Blu-ray copy for $3.95, so I figured why not?
That sounds like $3.95 that could have been spent in a much better way elsewhere.
You're probably right. Slaggy, you want to take this next one?
Of course I do. So, we had previously talked about the Pokemon 2DS bundles coming to Japan. We now have word about the various Pokemon-themed releases that will be coming for North America and Europe. So North America is actually not getting the 2DSs, but instead is getting a new 3DS bundle, the, you know, regular sized one with the faceplates. It will include the 2 red and blue virtual console downloads, so that's kind of cool. It comes with both of them, and a Pokemon theme, and a Charizard red version and Blastoise blue version faceplates that, as far as we know, are going to be exclusive to this bundle.
Yeah, you know, this is really exciting stuff to me. Obviously, I love these faceplates. They're based on the box art of the original Game Boy releases of Red and Blue, and I think they look really good. I don't really need a regular-sized new 3DS, but I want these faceplates so bad that I kind of want to buy one anyway.
If anyone doesn't want the faceplates but wants a new 3DS, you can send them to me.
I doubt anybody's going to go for that.
Now, over in Europe, you will be receiving the 2DS bundles. So these are the yellow, red, and blue ones that go with the yellow, red, and blue. And you'll also get a cover plate of Pokemon Super Mystery Dungeon, separate from those bundles, and some other Pokemon cover plates. So it'll be interesting to see which ones of those come out. But with the bundles, you'll get a sheet of 15 stickers. That's cute.
Excellent, excellent. All right. We also have word here of a new expansion for one of my favorite games of last year. This, of course, is Cities Snowfall, an expansion for Cities Skylines.
I think a lot of people on the East Coast are experiencing that right now.
Ah, shady shade. You know, this expansion is going to introduce a complete weather system and temperature mechanic to the game, as well as adding new public transportation options like trams.
Ooh, I like trams.
Yeah, this is going to be awesome. You know, I honestly feel, and I know this is a general consensus online right now, now that City Skylines is the best current city sim game. So to see them adding, you know, proper weather systems and the temperature mechanic, which is going to be cool, you know, so it'll impact, you know, people on the streets, you know, getting cold and relying more on different types of transport, public or private, based on the weather. I think it's really cool. It's going to add more intricacy, which for this kind of genre is always desirable. I think this is going to be great, and I can't wait for it to release on PC later this year.
Yeah, I think I'm going to need to pick up Skylines so I can get ready to enjoy the new features.
Excellent. You have probably heard of the upcoming MMO Black Desert Online. Well, ahead of next month's second closed beta test, Dom Games has released a standalone version of its character creator tools. So, you know, this game is largely known just for having, like, an amazing character creator. Now, if you have, you know, a reasonably modern PC, you don't really want to play the game, you just want to mess with this incredible character creator, you can go download that 7-gig executable from the Black Desert Online page and get playing right now.
Nice.
Get creating right now.
So, continuing the Minecraft craze is an announcement from Microsoft and Mojang that they will be releasing Microsoft Minecraft. I mean, I guess Microsoft Minecraft, right? Minecraft Education Edition, which will be distributed to educational institutions worldwide, which is basically a release that's based on the existing Minecraft Edu program, which is a kind of a modded Minecraft for use in the classroom. And I'm not too familiar with this, but I know that my kids can't stop talking about Minecraft, so maybe...
Neither can your friends, man.
Huh?
I said neither can your friends, man.
Well, yeah, but what I'm saying is that most probably they're onto something here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We also have word here of a new release in the Super Robot Taisen OG series. This is Super Robot Taisen OG, The Moon Dwellers. This was revealed in the recent issue of Famitsu. It is coming for the PlayStation 4 and PlayStation 3, presumably later this year. We don't know a whole lot more about the game yet, but when we do, I'm sure we will be here talking about it to you.
Bandai Namco has announced a new Dragon Ball RPG coming to 3DS. This was detailed in the latest issue of V-Jump, and Japan will be getting it sometime in 2016. It is known as Dragon Ball Project Fusion. I don't know if that's a final title or a work title, but...
I'm sure that that'll be a tentative title.
The magazine scan from V-Jump shows a fusion between Goku and Broly, so...
If you're familiar with the Dragon Ball canon, that is a thing that should not be. So yeah, expect to see a lot of crazy new experimental stuff out of this.
I just want
to
have Gohan and Piccolo fuse and be fusion buddies.
Ah, you know, I hope that's a thing. That'd be super cool.
I want, like, Majin Buu and Chi-Chi to fuse. And then she's like, no, why?
Ah. We also have word here that North American anime distributor Funimation is entering into a partnership with Japanese publisher Endgames, as well as mobile and web developer Game Samba, to produce officially licensed North American anime games.
According to this article, it's actually a Chinese publisher, Endgames.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is absolutely correct. They will be working on games officially licensed based on Tokyo Ghoul and Fairy Tail, with more to be announced at an upcoming time.
Those sound like good bets, because those are both super popular.
We also have word that Scott Cawthon has released yet another Five Nights at Freddy's game before its release date.
Wow.
This is Five Nights at Freddy's World, which is the JRPG-styled Five Nights at Freddy's game.
Oh, wow.
Previously, it had been announced for a February 19th release, but it ended up releasing on January 22nd. So I haven't played it yet myself, but I'm very excited to see this. If any of you out there in Internet Radioland have played it, let us know what you think by tweeting at us at GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
With the .org spelled out D-O-T-O-R-G. We also have word that Wild Arms series creator Akifumi Kaneko-san is teasing a 20th anniversary project.
Oh, wow.
Specifically, he was teasing on Twitter that he just got back from a new Wild Arms planning meeting. So, you know, this is definitely something to keep your eye open on. This is a series that we here really, really, really love. So I think it's fair to say that Wild Arms is probably coming back, and we could not be more excited. This is one that I would stay tuned for more news on in the future. And last, but certainly not least, we have word here of a new game being developed by designers who previously worked on such games as Eternal Darkness, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood, The Warriors, and Far Cry 3.
Ooh.
This is Children of Zodiarks. And while you might not expect it based on the creative team there, it is a Final Fantasy Tactics clone. Specifically, they are taking the tactical, story-driven RPG style of game that was seen popularized in Final Fantasy Tactics, Shining Force, Tactics Ogre, and adding a collectible card element to it and craftable, like crafting dice element into it to create what should be a unique take on unit-based tactical RPG games. This is a little bit strange because this is a Kickstarter game, but it was previously approved via the Square Enix Collective and has actually been in the works for several years already, so the game is actually quite a bit further along than most games at the Kickstarter phase. They're right now looking for money to finish polishing the game and to release it on additional platforms beyond just PC and Mac. This is a game I'm really, really, really excited about. Seeing how far along it is, I feel comfortable backing it and talking about it, even though, you know, I've mentioned previously that how bad I've been burnt on some Kickstarters has started to really scare me off the platform.
And this has already been funded, like almost double its goal of $34,000. It's at $65,000 as of recording, so...
Yeah, so it'll be coming to PS4 as well at this rate.
That's awesome, yeah. So, the little previews look really cute.
Yeah.
I mean, like, really... polished, like you said.
Yeah, because again, you know, this game, they think that they'll be finished with it this summer, because again, you know, they've been making it this whole time. They're just now looking for, you know, to finish off the project and start porting. So
excellent.
If you're interested in the sound of this game, I would highly recommend you check it out.
Check it out.
Unfortunately, we do have one piece here of doom and gloom. So, Slaggy, do you want to get us started on this? This is one I'm kind of bummed about.
David Gator, you know, who you probably know best from Dragon Age and, you know, the other BioWare RPGs, has announced that he will be leaving BioWare after 17 years at the company. So, you know, it sounds like it was a, you know, friendly parting of ways. I'm sure he's just moving on to greener pastures, and I'm sure we're going to continue to see great things from him.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was really bummed when I read this. I think that, you know, Dragon Age is fantastic, and he's one of the principal writers on it.
Yeah.
All of his work over the years at BioWare has been top-notch, and to me, I definitely see this as a big hit for BioWare. Like,
yeah.
This sucks. This is not a great thing. But at the same time, he's been working on BioWare games for 17 years. He's a brilliantly creative mind. It's hard not to imagine he doesn't want to start fresh with something new, and
right.
I really hope that goes well for him. We here at GameBuie.org. Definitely wish him the best in his future endeavors.
And you know, I mean, he's also one of the most prominent queer games people out there too. So, you know, I'm hoping that we'll see, you know, lots of wonderful queer content coming from him.
Fingers crossed. All right. Well, we also have some news that is...
controversial.
Oh my God.
So controversial.
You know how I have a clip of that, right?
I know, but I like saying it.
Ah, fair enough.
So this is super controversial, kind of. I mean, you remember when we were talking about Mario Maker and how they said that they might remove unpopular levels?
Yep, I do remember that.
They have started to do that, but they don't really...
They haven't been communicating with players why their stages are removed.
Why?
So that's, you know, that's kind of some crap. Previously, they had indicated that they would be removing low popularity stages. But as Kotaku points out, low popularity was never actually defined. So we have no way of knowing what stages have been deleted or why. It's kind of weird. So either way, you know, this is something a lot of people are very upset about. People who have had stages deleted Wicked are very upset. You know, they've tried reloading stages, even stages that have seemed to be fairly popular, and they've been unable to re-upload them.
Yeah, so they've, like, the level has been banned, basically.
Yeah, so people are pretty disappointed and upset about this, and to me, rightfully so. If you got a message from Nintendo that just once was like, oh, hey, we deleted this stage due to the following reason, that would at least give you some answer. But for there to be no communication at all is really, honestly, pretty crappy, and I think it's something Nintendo should work on changing. Sai,
yeah,
what
I
is
almost
your
wonder
thought?
If, like, any of mine have been taken down because nobody likes them.
Oh, that's not true. You had more stars than I did. Oh, crap. I'm probably been completely wiped out.
Something else that I never noticed in previous patch notes is that you can't use the words like, yeah, or a star symbol, because those are seen as begging for likes, yeahs, or stars.
I didn't know that.
So, yeah, this is kind of, like I said, it's not necessarily the fact that Nintendo is moderating these and, you know, kind of keeping the upload pool for, you know, quality levels, but, you know, with, like you said, no communication as to what those standards are, then, yeah, it's a little shady. I mean, I don't think it's intentional shade. I think it's just probably an oversight that, unfortunately, Nintendo makes oversights like these often enough that people will be like,
F in Nintendo. The next piece of controversial news we have is that Jonathan Blow's next puzzle game, The Witness, was recently confirmed for a January 26th release at a cost of $40 on PS4 and PC. Usually, this isn't terribly noteworthy, but for whatever reason, people have been really coming out of the woodwork to protest this amount of money on what is being described as an indie game. The common rhetoric is that indie games should be priced at $20 to $30, not $40. This is too much for an indie game, and it's inappropriate. Obviously, you know, the counterpoint is that Jonathan Blow has been working on this game for years.
From what I've seen, it looks gorgeous.
It has very high production values, and, you know, as such, this is the amount of money that he feels is the appropriate cost for it. You know, he's been working very hard on it. It looks beautiful. Supposedly, it's a really smart game. And to me, you know, I've talked about this before. I appreciate that most of us don't want to spend any more money than we have to on games and entertainment generally. But, like, to me, if someone has worked very hard on a game, it's their right to say, you know, this is the amount of money I need for this game. This is what I need for this to have been a profitable endeavor for me. You know, this is what I'm selling my game for. And to me, if you're unhappy with The Witness being $40 on PS4 and PC, you know, hold off on buying it. Buy it on a Steam sale. I'm sure come next winter, it'll be, you know, $15. So, you know, I definitely fall down on the side of game devs setting their own price and setting the appropriate price, which in this case, I think an argument can be made that $40 is. It's been crazy to me that so many people have come out of the woodwork, both on forums, on gaming websites, on social media, to talk about how inappropriate they think this price is. Slaggy, what is your take?
Yeah, that's kind of my thing, is that if you don't want to pay $40 for it, then don't. I mean, if you're interested in it and the price is not right, then wait for a PlayStation sale or a Steam sale or whatsoever. And, you know, I mean, no one is forcing you to buy this game. So, I mean, that's kind of how I've always felt about game pricing.
Yeah. And again, you know, I largely feel the same way as you do on that one. Again, if you're not happy with the price, just wait until you are happy with the price. Or find something else to take up your time with. I mean, it's been a really crazy year for games already, and we're only 1 month in. So I'm sure you could find something to play if you're completely let down by The Witness's release details.
Yeah.
And last, but certainly not least, Fire Emblem Fates Western localization is removing problematic elements involving the gay and lesbian characters.
I think it's a good thing.
There was a storyline in the Japanese release where a male character drugs a female character who is a lesbian into seeing him as a female so that they can spark up a romance while he is in the female form in her head. Obviously, that has a whole ton of moral issues and reasons why that's just gross as heck. But they're releasing that, they're removing that storyline for the North American release, and the same-sex marriage will remain in the game. So, yes, you know, we are still having LGBT content in the game. We will not have the weird gay conversion storyline that probably shouldn't have been in there in the first place. So to me, you know, obviously this story should have been controversial, but a surprising number of people didn't think so. And now, you know, there's a certain faction of gamers and people of conservative mindsets who feel that this is censorship, that this game should not be supported by gamers who are interested in free speech or whatever, and are working on, you know, getting a boycott together for the game. To me, you know, this falls under, I mean, it falls under, first off, it's not censorship because they're not being persecuted for the content. They weren't being forced to remove it. They said, hey, we know what attitudes about these kinds of situations are in the rest of the world, and they are not appropriate. We're removing them. Nobody told them to. They just realized that this is not acceptable to in places other than Japan. And again, you know, things are slowly changing even in Japan, and I get the feeling that this storyline was not that well received over there either, based on what I've seen on social media. So, to me, it sounds like a storyline wasn't working for people, definitely wouldn't work here. They cut it, should be case closed. Instead, this is being made into some big collusion situation, censorship, persecution. You know, obviously, people, a certain group of people has targeted a Nintendo employee that works at the Treehouse who happens to be female, and have a petition going for her removal, that she should be fired this. Yeah, so
I really hope it's not the Treehouse person that I follow.
It almost certainly is, unfortunately.
That's terrible, because I like that person a lot.
But, you know, I'm trying not to name names. I'm definitely trying not to give anyone any more attention than they deserve. Just, this is a very unfortunate. I can't help but think that even just from the state of facts as they currently are, you can probably see what the agenda here really is. And I just hope that you don't fall victim to it. There's no reason to boycott this game, for real. And I'd be willing to talk with you about why that is in private if you really, truly, in your heart of hearts believe that this is a bad thing. You know, reach out to me privately. I'm not going to attack you. I'm not going to shame you. But no, this is a positive change. I'm sorry. This is a positive change.
Yeah. And my thing is that, like, I'd like to choose to focus on the fact that, you know, we had, what was it, Tomodachi Life that didn't allow the same sex thing, and like, oh, that was an error in programming. Like, I'd like to just say, well done, Nintendo. You're listening, and you've come a long way. And I, for one, and I'm excited to pick up Conquest, is the one with Niles, who in Japan is Zero, right?
I believe so. I think he's actually a speaking character in both, but you can only romance him.
You can only romance him in Conquest. So, yeah. Yes, hello.
All right, I just want to know, why is his name not Zero anymore? That's a badass name.
I know, but at least Niles makes me think of Nile, which is, you know, a sexy contestant from the final cycle of America's Next Top Model, so...
OMG, we're spoiling Top Model on this show. That's inappropriate.
I said contestant.
I see.
So, with all right, that, should we dive in, or...
I think that we should. So we're going to talk here about a handful of our favorite Star Wars video games, and then we're going to talk about a couple of Star Wars games that are, let's just say, notoriously bad. Let's call a spade a spade. Slang, why don't you get us started with our number 8 pick for the good games? Because I know that was one that you had strong feelings about.
Yeah, so this one might be a little bit so controversial because, I mean, here's the thing. I'm a fan of Star Wars, but I am not, like, a hardcore fanboy to the point where, like, you know, I know the community general consensus on stuff and such. I just remember at the time really liking Star Wars Episode 1 Racer. This was a game that came out for Windows, N64, and Dreamcast in 1999-2000. There was also a Game Boy Color version, but that one is, like, totally different, so that kind of doesn't count. I never played it. So this was a pod race game based on the pod racing scene from Star Wars Episode 1. And, you know, that, of course, being a very critically panned movie for most people, and kind of just so anything having to do with Episode 1 is kind of always just like, no, But I remember it being pretty solid. You know, it was a pod-racing game. There were a couple different modes. You know, you could do a tournament mode. There was just, like, a free race mode, time attack. You could do multiplayer, two-player, online multiplayer for PC and Mac. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and, you know, I want to point out, we're actually not talking about the arcade game here, Wars Racer Arcade. But for me, that would actually probably, we're going to include that here because... That's a fantastic game. It's completely different. You know, the games that Sidekick were talking about were LucasArts developed games. The Episode One Racer Arcade was a Sega game, which should tell you everything you need to know. You know, Sega has a history of amazing arcade racing games, and the Star Wars Racer Arcade was no different. It had, you know, like the whole cockpit you sit in. It had like two ignition, like slidey sticks.
Arcade racers are always so much fun.
Right, to control each, you know, individual pod, I guess they are. You had like a boost button. It ended up playing a lot like almost like Hydro Thunder, which is a well-loved classic arcade racing title.
Yeah.
Just really well-designed tracks, a fantastic sense of speed in the way the game worked. It, you know, very similar to what Sega ended up doing with the F-Zero arcade game.
Yeah, and you know, my thing is that it's so easy to do a racing game bad, and with Episode 1, even contemporaneously, you know, it would have been so easy for like racing game plus Episode One to be a big trash heap. But you know, I think for its time, it was pretty solid. I mean, I can't say like if it would be worth going back if you see it in a thrift store or something and you can pick it up for a couple bucks. I mean, I would say it's worthwhile for a little bit. There's unfortunately no current way to play it, but like I said, I thought it was decent. It was fun for a spin with, you know, for a little bit.
And you know, conversely, if you should find yourself in an arcade that has a racer arcade machine, and you know they do exist, you sometimes will find them at like a Dave and Buster's, for example. I highly recommend you do play that. It's a fantastic experience. And definitely, definitely, definitely something you would not regret doing if you're interested in Star Wars games, which you probably are if you're listening to this.
Yeah, but from what I had read when I was researching for this episode, it actually was pretty well received contemporaneously and sold, you know, the most recent sales data I was able to find on it was like over 3 million copies. So, you know.
Oh, fantastic. So it the home versions, which again, completely different game, but appear to have done pretty well.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, you know, I always love hearing about underappreciated games finding their audience.
Yeah, now, of course, as with every episode we do here, if you have a more crystal clear memory of this, and I'm just remembering it through nostalgia lens or something, please, I'd love to hear your feedback. But like I said,
I just want to hear what y'all think about all these games.
I remember it, I mean, I mostly played it two-player with a friend of mine, but, so I mean, I can't really say, like, the tournament mode or if, like, the AI was bad or whatever, but, I mean, my thing is, I had fun, so I would consider that a success.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, then I'm going to move on to our next pick, number 7. This is Sega's Star Wars Trilogy Arcade. It is a part of a series of games, and it is actually the immediate predecessor to Star Wars Racer Arcade. So this game is, again, you know, you sit in a cockpit and you have a flight stick. But what's really strange is that the entire game is not actually flight games. You do have really cool missions where you control an X-Wing and you're in, you know, a really, really cool, like, space fight against various TIE fighters and what have you. There's, like, a Hoth mission where you're in a snow speeder and, you know, you're trying to trip up the walkers while destroying probes and other snow speeders. You know, there's also a really cool speeder bike sequence. So, you know, these all use the flight stick fairly traditionally as you're piloting vehicles. But there were also bonus stages that would become available once you had completed the conventional flight stages. And so this would have like a one-on-one battle against Boba Fett where you're using the stick as a lightsaber to like reflect Boba Fett's blaster shots back at him in order to like try and like force him backward into a Sarlacc pit. Or you'd have like a lightsaber duel against Darth Vader in the Death Star. And these sequences were really strange and fairly unique in the arcade in 1999 when this released. So, you know, it had really great graphics for the time. It was really cool to have that kind of like variety of gameplay, and it's a really cool game. You know, it has all music by John Williams and everything. I had a lot of fun with it, and it's definitely something, again, if you see it in an arcade you should definitely check it out.
Excellent.
Saigi, have you ever played Trilogy Arcade?
You know, that was unfortunately during an era where I wasn't really in arcades as much, so I missed out on that, but...
You know, there's actually a machine for it even today at Southland Mall, right near
is there really?
Where we're recording right now. Yeah.
We should have gone and done that this weekend.
Well, let's go do it after this episode.
Why don't you tell us about our number six pick, Captain Spike?
This is one I talk about fairly often, and it is Shadows of the Empire. So you may or may not remember Shadows of the Empire. It was a thing that LucasArts was doing. It was a multimedia project that is like meant to be the backstory between what happened in between the times of Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, which at that time, no piece of Star Wars fiction had ever explored. That was like off limits to all of the expanded universe people. And basically, LucasArts was trying to figure out if there was like commercial possibility of doing a movie set in that time. And the way they did that was by doing a combination of like a novel, a comic book, the video game series, and even like action figures and a soundtrack of John Williams music that would be the potential score for this movie. Unfortunately, things didn't really go super well. You know, John Williams, while he composed a few themes, ended up kind of handing it off to an associate of his, Joel McNeely. I know this isn't Star Wars history, Bowie, but it's important to establish this because ultimately Shadows of the Empire as a whole was viewed as kind of a failure. But this game, Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, for Nintendo 64 and Windows 95.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it ended up releasing in 1997 and for Windows in 1996 on Nintendo 64.
So a pretty early N64 title.
And it follows the story of one of the main characters from the Shadows of the Empire project, Dash Rendar, and introduces...
Oh, that's such a Star Wars name.
Right, it really is. But, you know, it follows the story of the multimedia project pretty well, and it ends up being, like, a really cool third-person 3D, like, shooter exploration game that also has some fairly cool, like, flighty bits. So, you know, it's ultimately, I still feel, a pretty cool game. While the game was in production, Shigeru Miyamoto-san actually worked with LucasArts on the game. Obviously, you know, it was a Nintendo 64 console exclusive. Nintendo ended up working with LucasArts on it to some light degree, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it was also unique among many Nintendo 64 titles. It had a real orchestral soundtrack rather than synthesized, like, MIDI music. It's a really cool game. I even still sometimes bust it out. I enjoy it, so I think it's good stuff.
Excellent.
Now, this one was one you were really passionate about, Slaggy. So why don't you tell all of our listeners out there what our number five pick is?
All right. So our number five is kind of a collective of games a little bit. But I would specifically focus on one title, and I'll get to that. And this is the Lego Star Wars series. This was, of course, by Traveler's Tales, who's, you know, at this point, they're pretty much synonymous with the Lego games, and they do a pretty good business with it. You know, we just talked about Lego's Marvel's Avengers coming, you know, with all that exclusive PS3 and PS4 content. So it's sometimes kind of interesting to think back to a pre-Lego Traveler's Tales, and you know, they did some like Muppet racing stuff that just sounds kind of abysmal. So you know, I can't honestly say I was familiar with too much of Traveler's Tales work before Lego Star Wars, but you know, these were just really cute, clever platforming adventures based on the Star Wars franchise, and you know, based on Star Wars Lego sets, obviously, that just, you know, they always had a kind of like a little tongue-in-cheek humor, and you know, like, you know, played around with the conceit of them being Legos and stuff, so you know, things would break apart into bricks. So I mean, if you're familiar with any of the Lego games, you know the drill, but
this is where that got its start.
Is where it got its start, and I had to think back. I was like, oh yeah, I guess this was really the first one, and you know, I still think it it really worked well for the Star Wars universe. I haven't played all of the Lego ones, but you know, I think it really was a good fit for it. The original Lego Lego Star Wars actually followed the episodes 1, 2, and 3, and that was for GBA, GameCube, PS2, Xbox, Windows, and Mac. That was released in March of 2005. And then Lego Star Wars 2, the original trilogy, for GBA, GameCube, Windows, DS, PS2, PSP, Xbox, Xbox 360, and Mac, because, you know, it's like on everything. That came out in September 2006. And then the kind of ultimate edition, which was Lego Star Wars The Complete Saga, was for Windows, Wii, PS3, 360, DS, and Mac in May 2007. And I think that's probably the best way to pick up if you get the 360 version, if you can find it at like a GameStop or something. That is backwards compatible with the Xbox One. So, I mean, that's definitely a good option. And the Wii version of The Complete Saga had some light waggle stuff, which was kind of cute. So, you know, they were just really cute adaptations of the movies, you know, loosely more or less following the plot. You could unlock the different Lego characters, so like, oh, I want to play as like C-3PO, you could do that, or I want to play as Darth Maul, you could do that. And if my memory serves me right, there were like special areas where you had to be a certain character to unlock that area or something. It's been a while since I've played played through them, but you know, just some really nothing groundbreaking, I would say, maybe brick breaking, but oh, come on. I was expecting at least a chuckle.
Nope.
You know, I wouldn't say the Lego games are groundbreaking, but it did start a very successful franchise of games, so which is defined Traveler's Tale and definitely kept them busy.
And I gotta own up, the reason why I didn't laugh is I was distracted. I was actually trying to find out on Google, like, why the heck isn't there an Episode 7 Lego game?
Oh, I'm sure that's coming.
Yeah, except, I mean, I would have expected it out months ago now. Like, the actual Episode 7 and Lego kits hit months ago.
You know, I mean, they've typically done these in the trilogy, so I wonder if we have to wait.
Yeah, but that's dumb.
These days it would make more sense to do it episodic,
right?
Know, $15 a pop or whatever.
Holy mackerel. And that's how they should be doing it. This is silly.
Yeah, come on. I want playable Lego Poe, please.
Right? I need me some Poe Dameron in Lego form ASAP.
I need me Poe Dameron in any form, but that's a different discussion.
Totally fair. Moving on. Our next pick, and this is number 4 for those of you playing the home game, is Star Wars Battlefront. And before you pick up your pitchforks, we are talking about classic Battlefront. You know, I was a big fan of these games. We've talked about them here countless times on the show. Originally, the first Battlefront released on Windows, Xbox, and PlayStation 2 on September 21st, 2004.
I was about to say Windows XP, but I guess it would have been Windows XP, wouldn't it?
But, you know, so this is a fantastic game, both Battlefront and Battlefront 2. Third-person shooter, whole like objective-based game, massive multiplayer component. Not massively, although, you know, there were quite a few simultaneous players in these games. Really groundbreaking. You know, it's super funny to think that, like, the Xbox and PlayStation 2 versions had online support for 32 players online, and it's like, I've played multiplayer games on Xbox One that don't allow 32 players.
Yeah.
And that's to say nothing about the fact that the Mac and PC versions, the Mac version released at a later date, but, you know, ultimately they were both available to play online for up to 64 players. So, you know, just a ton of cool stuff here. You could play with a ton of people. Every battle ended up feeling super epic. It was really cool, you know, and these games had a ton of content. They had so many maps, so many different units that you could use with different, like, loadouts. And it was just it was a really very cool game. Unfortunately, while you can still, even on modern systems, run Battlefront 2 pretty easily, the online component doesn't work anymore, I don't believe, so it's...
That's a bummer.
It's kind of a bummer, yeah. You miss out on a lot of the flavor and the real fun and focus of Battlefront, but it's still worth checking out. Fantastic experience, and frankly, a lot better than the current version of Battlefront,
yeah,
which we're going to talk about a little later. Yeah,
Battlefront, that was kind of like Pandemic Studios, like, big crown jewels, right? I mean, they did, like, the Mercenaries series, and Destroy All Humans, but I mean, Battlefront was kind of like their pride and joy, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That was, Battlefront was really what Pandemic became known for. You know, they had also done the, like, a Lord of the Rings game. They were working on the Saboteur for PS3, 360 Windows. Destroy All Humans, as you mentioned. But really, it was, you're right, Battlefront yeah. that really brought them to the forefront in a lot of people's eyes. And, you know, it's funny because Battlefront 2, and obviously I think everyone would agree that Battlefront 2 is the better of the Battlefront games, it actually released only a year later after Battlefront 1. Unfortunately, again, you know, the online stuff is taken down because it's a better game in basically every way. It is just absolutely fantastic. It has a cool mode, Galactic Conquest, which there was a version of in Battlefront 1, but I think it's better in Battlefront 2. It's almost like Risk, but where each like conflict of like one area like invading the next takes place as a battle in the game's battle system. So it was really cool. It gave like a really cool sense of progression when you're playing it. It was just really very cool, and something that, you know, the modern version of Battlefront is unfortunately missing, much to everybody's dismay.
Yeah.
Next up, we have the 2008 console release of Star Wars The Force Unleashed. Now, The Force Unleashed is something that is a game that a lot of people are torn on. It has a pretty cool story, but it doesn't really fit in the canon. The protagonist is known as Starkiller. He is Galen Merrick, who was also known as Vader's Sith apprentice. He appeared as a guest character in Soul Calibur 4, I think it was.
That sounds right, yeah.
And I think he's a cool character. I think his backstory is fantastic, but he does feats of the Force that definitely don't fit in the canon. Like, at one point, he uses the Force single-handedly to pull a Star Destroyer out of space and into a planet's orbit so that it can crash on the planet. And it's like, that's not how the Force works, boo-boo. But it's a really great game as a game. The gameplay is basically a character action game. So, you know, some people who are not, like, character action-focused found it to be really lackluster. It was too demanding. It was too technical, too confusing, too much going on. But for me, I got super into it. To me, it's one of those games I still return to fairly often. I thought it was a great game. I have all of the like little Galen Merrick like limited edition action figures and stuff. I was so into this game. I loved it. Sagi, what is your opinion of The Force Unleashed to the degree that you are familiar with it?
You know, I never got around to playing it, but I always heard good things about it. I mean, it looked visually impressive. I know that's not everything, but I remember it, like, you know, looking pretty good. I remember hearing that it played pretty well. So, I mean, I guess for me, I'm not bothered by, oh, this doesn't fit in the Star Wars lore. You know, whatever. If it's fun, that's what matters to me. It's something I've always meant to come back around and give a go to, so.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. Excellent. Well, all right. Well, then let's start whittling this list down. We are at number 2, and we're going to cheat a little bit for these next two games. In both cases, they are going to be series of games.
We've kind of been cheating like that the whole time, though.
We really have. And our number 2 pick is the Super Star Wars series of games. That is Super Star Wars, Super Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, and Super Star Wars Return of the Jedi. These are some very classic Super Nintendo games that released back in 1992. They were developed by Sculptured Software in conjunction with LucasArts. And quite interestingly, despite being a Super Nintendo game, the first game in the series, Super Star Wars, does now have a virtual console release on the PlayStation 4.
Oh.
Indeed.
Yeah,
we talked about that here previously on the show.
Yeah, because I believe all three of them are on Wii Virtual Console.
They're all on the Wii Virtual Console, yes. Not the Wii U Virtual Console, but on the Wii Virtual Console.
Which still is good.
The PS4 and PS Vita, I guess PSN releases, took place back in November of 2015. They run pretty darn well. I'm overall very happy with it. And you know, this is actually a game that was very well received when it was originally released. The graphics were fantastic, probably the best graphics of any Star Wars game up to that point. You know, very lush 16-bit art style, a lot of use of like colors and stuff. So it was really cool. The gameplay is very tightly focused, run and gun style, except with Luke, after a certain point, you get a lightsaber. And so it's run and stab gameplay. It also had like land speeder and X-wing stages. As you went on, you'd get like multiple playable characters who would have different abilities. So like Chewie would have a different gun style than Han Solo. Leia, as the bounty hunter Bosch, would have a different, you know, different special attacks than Jedi Luke would. It just really, to me, was the first time I had played a Star Wars game that felt like a Star Wars game that wasn't like generic. There was a series of NES Star Wars games. I was actually really into them. I think we've talked about them here on the show for some reason. I can't recall though. They were published by JVC, developed by Beam Software, and actually also published Game Boy versions by Capcom, and that might be why we talked about it maybe when we were talking about Capcom sometime.
Capcom seems like a sensible fit.
Right? These older games, though, you know, they were very generic. I didn't really feel like they did a whole lot to feel special like Star Wars games, but Super Star Wars, you know, you get to a point where in Empire Strikes Back, you start getting, like, force abilities when you're playing as Luke, and you can, like, throw your lightsaber all around the screen and control it with the cross pad in order to hit enemies from afar, and you felt like you were playing a Jedi. It felt, you know, like a more interesting and better use of the property than any game that had really come before it, in my opinion. So,
yeah, I mean, I haven't played these since the SNES days, and I mean, I guess you saying that now, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess they kind of did innovate in some ways, but you know, I was about to say I never felt like they were like groundbreaking platformers, but they were super solid, super tight from my memory.
Yeah, and you know, something else I really got into, and this might be the difference between you and I, is that they were designed to be fairly hard, and they had really intense boss battles. And for me, that was like super plus, like super, super, super plus. But I can see how, for some people, it was probably frustrating. So either way, you know, you can check them out on Virtual Console on the Wii. If you have an SNES, you can find carts. I feel like, I don't think these are super crazy expensive carts, because I see them at like flea markets and used game stores all the time. If they are hard to find, someone needs to let me know, because I can easily buy like 5 of them this week. And you know, obviously if you have a PS4 or PS Vita, you can play that first game in the series. So I would recommend it, and I think you should check it out.
Yeah, it's definitely an easy one to get a hold of compared to some of the others on our list.
And Slaggy, I know that this number one is has at least a component of which you are very passionate about. So why don't you get us started on our number one?
Well, I mean, this one's probably going to be surprising to nobody, but our number one choice goes to the Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic series, which we are including the Old Republic MMO as an aspect of that, because for all intents and purposes, it's KOTOR 3. I mean, I'm sure some people will be like, no, it's not, but BioWare's basically said as much, that it's basically KOTOR 3. And so, you know, these were RPGs from BioWare. I say were, but we have the Old Republic still being supported with that new expansion last year. The original KOTOR was an Xbox console exclusive, right? That was back in 2003.
Yep.
And KOTOR 2 was, they handed it off to Obsidian because BioWare wanted to focus on some other stuff. So that was also an Xbox exclusive, right? I remember those being kind of like selling points.
Console
like,
exclusive,
Well, yes, console exclusives, also, you know, available for PC, Mac, and Linux, apparently. I didn't realize that. But so, I mean, they were pretty much BioWare, I say pretty much, you know, like BioWare games of the era, based on kind of like a D20 system in the way that, you know, the Baldur's Gate, Neverwinter games were. And, you know, these found a really big following. I didn't play it at the time. You might remember that my introduction to the BioWare world was basically Mass Effect. So I could kind of not really been hip to the BioWare groove. And, you know, for me, a lot of the turn-based stuff was kind of a little bit slower of a pace than I appreciate. And I know that you can alter the settings and stuff to make it, you know, more like a real-time RPG. But, you know, this definitely was a kind of new ground for the Star Wars lore, from what I'm familiar with, because when BioWare was working with Lucas to, you know, put these games together, when they were having initial discussions, they said, oh, well, you could have a game that takes place during such and such between such and such movies, or set it 4,000 years before, and they're like, oh, let's do that. So it follows Revan. Am I saying his
It's always how I've said it.
You can choose for the character to be male or female, so go BioWare. And just kind of this whole saga about the Old Republic, you know, this deep history of the series.
Excellent, excellent. But I feel like you haven't really talked enough yet about the biggest entry in this series.
Well, I mean, I would say a lot of people would argue that KOTOR 1 and 2 were the big entries, but, you know, for me personally, it's the Old Republic, which I keep saying was, it's still running, it's still available, you can go play it right now. The MMO, also from BioWare, that launched in 2011. And, you know, we've talked about this over the years with our experience with it. You know, it kind of got a lot of flack for, you know, it went free to play really quickly, and, you know, so it kind of had a troubled history. But I thought even at launch, it was a really solid title. You know, it has the classic BioWare dialogue tree aspect and light and dark side paths, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, just as far as, you know, MMOs go, and especially kind of in that era when, you know, that was just shortly after World of Warcraft Cataclysm launched. So, you know, a lot of us were still kind of riding that Wrath of the Lich King train. So, I still think that gameplay-wise, it holds up pretty well. The fact that it's free-to-play now means that you can enjoy it without subbing. And, I mean, I really appreciate the, you know, for someone who, like I said, has not really been, like, a huge Star Wars lore fan, or, you know, like, too concerned with the lore, you know, and just kind of been more of a casual fan. Like, I really got into, like, the story missions and stuff, and I really thought it was doing something different. You know, pretty much the only thing that I can compare to is Final Fantasy 14 2.0 in terms of like story quest and really making your character feel like part of the overall saga of the game.
Absolutely.
So I know it's kind of a controversial one, but I mean, I think it's definitely worthy of being included with the, you know, classic KOTOR games.
Absolutely. And, you know, so I want to real quick, you know, I am a big fan of the KOTOR games. I, you know, it's actually kind of what's responsible for getting me into BioWare, really. They're just fantastic games based very heavily on the Star Wars D20 pen and paper RPGs. In fact, carried a lot of the terminology and mechanics directly over from that in the first Knights of the Old Republic. And was a fantastic way to, like, explore the Star Wars game universe, or not game universe, but lore universe, especially in a time when Star Wars was not easy to be excited about. Knights of the Old Republic 2 was fantastic. You know, BioWare sourced it to Obsidian Entertainment. I'm a big fan of Obsidian. You know, they often make games that are technically a bit weak, but I feel like they always have great concepts, great ideas, good stories, and I absolutely thought that that was also a grand slam. But Old Republic is probably my favorite MMO, and to me, the perfect culmination of Old Republic as a series. You know, BioShock has always said, we get a lot of people.
BioWare.
Oh, BioShock, lol. BioWare is always, you know, oh, people ask us why we haven't made KOTOR 3, 4, 5, etc. But we feel that Old Republic is KOTOR 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, I was just reading that quote like the other day somewhere.
And I still feel that that's true. Like, every class in that game has its own unique story that is not the same as the stories for the other characters. Like, it's pretty different. Along with, you know, light side, dark side variants to some degree. And you end up with effectively what is like 8 different stories.
Yeah, and I mean, now you can basically play the game solo.
Yeah, you can play the game solo. You could even when it released,
but
really.
But they've like really made it more like solo-friendly.
Yeah, even more so now. Again, I want to be clear, I felt the game was soloable quite easily, even at launch.
I mean, just aside from, you know, going to like flashpoints and stuff.
Yeah, well, it's version of instanced dungeons. But even then, most of those were side stories, not necessarily necessarily something something you had to play through, as I recall.
Yeah.
So either way, you know, I think that Old Republic is absolutely a model MMO. And, you know, it keeps growing. It just had a new expansion release back in October, which, you know, has, again, new innovative features, including letting you just skip to the new content if you want, which I think is very cool. And that one has a completely new story. All characters share the same story in that one, but it is, again, done in the style of a Knights of the Old Republic game. So it's very much feels playing it like you're just getting a new Knights of the Old Republic. It has a whole focus on cinematic storytelling, new planets, new companions. The story is way more dynamic in terms of being affected by player choice using like phasing technology, like what Blizzard does. So it very much feels even more like playing a Knights of the Republic game, even more than ever before. And it's just very, very cool the way they've done it. Like, if you haven't played the Knights of the Fallen Empire, the most recent expansion for the Old Republic, I highly recommend you check it out if you love the Knights of the Old Republic games, because it feels like a new one of those. And the fact that it's online is just almost like incidental, I should say. Highly, highly, highly recommend it. It's very cool stuff. And overall, I absolutely think that Star Wars, the Old Republic as a franchise, so including Knights of the Old Republic, my favorite Star Wars universe game.
All right.
With all that having been said, we want to talk a little bit.
That's right. I was just like, oh, we still got to talk about the stinkers.
Yeah, we're going to talk about three Star Wars games that could probably be called not as good. So, Sly, do you want to get us started with the first one?
Yeah. Well, is this first the worst, or...
No, we'll go in reverse order. Start at three.
Okay, so, I mean, this could be considered the worst game in some ways, because it is just, like, basically a joke. We are talking about Star Wars Kinect. Now,
it's Kinect Star Wars.
Kinect Star Wars? Oh, okay, I can't even be bothered, okay? Like, I mean, here's the thing, like, you know, there's, especially early on with the Kinect, with, like, you know, a lot of those, like, rare Kinect sports adventure stuff, people are just like, oh, man, like, it really felt like the Kinect, and I guess even to this day, a lot of anti-Kinect sentiment, you know, feels like the Kinect kind of didn't deliver on its promise in a lot of ways, but particularly for Star Wars, where, you know, you would have expected, oh, man, like, lightsaber duels, and all of this and that, and, you know, using force powers. It's like, nah, we're just going to give you, like, you know, a dance battle. They basically took what could have been, you know, basically an ultimate Star Wars experience, exclusive for the 360 and all that, and just made a mini-game haven.
Ah, yeah, Galactic Dance-Off is still...
It's a meme. It is straight-up meme status.
Yeah, it's awful. Like, so, you know, there were a couple of, like, traditional Star Wars songs, but there were also, like, remixes of modern pop music to have Star Wars lyrics. So, like, Holla Back Girl became Hologram Girl. Riding Solo became I'm Han Solo. It was awful. There was, you know, like, these really weird, like, cinemas of the Emperor, like, calling out a player and then, like, showing them how to dance. It's like, what is going on here? This is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, there were also, you know, like, lightsaber, force, different, you know, things. There was pod racing, but, I mean, like... You know, it's just, it was not what it should have been. This was kind of in a dark era where, you know, we saw a lot of Star Wars stuff being pretty much marketed only to children. You know, like, there was that Clone Wars CG movie. I'm not talking about the Clone Wars, you know, show on Cartoon Network.
Well, that movie was actually the first four episodes of that spliced together. So you fundamentally are talking about that. It's just that the show gets better after, like, the halfway point of the second season.
Oh.
Yeah, but it was a mess to start. But continue.
No, just so, I mean, it was really, I felt dumbed down. I thankfully do not own this because, I would not spend money on this.
Ah, you know, I do have a copy. I actually don't have a Kinect for my 360 anymore. But, you know, just remembering this game kind of makes me want to go find one so I can play it again.
Well, I've got my 360 that I don't have hooked up, which I do have a Kinect for.
Oh, snaps. We'll talk about that later. All right. Do you have anything else to say about Kinect Star Wars?
Let's not.
All right. Well, then let's move forward to Star Wars, Masters of Terrace Kasai.
You say Terrible Kuso?
All right. So we're not going to talk about this for very long.
Because we did talk about this on our Kusoge episode, didn't we?
Because we talked about this on our Kusoge episode. This game is shit. It's literally, it's a shit game.
It's the Great Mighty Pooh?
Ah, well, the idea was for LucasArts to take a look at Soul Edge, Tekken, a Virtua Fighter, and, you know, to play these games and then design a game of that level as a fighting game based in the Star Wars universe. The problem is, that's not really how fighting game development works. So what you end up with is just a complete mockery of those other fighting games. We also had issues like lightsabers are treated like batons, like you hit people with them hard and it impacts them. There's no like cutting, no slicing. I can appreciate, of course, why
they were toy lightsabers.
All right. I can appreciate why LucasArts maybe didn't want to have a game where Luke Skywalker is cutting off Princess Leia's arm or something. But like, if you're going to have a lightsaber fighting game, you can't have it do all of the damage of swinging a branch at someone. That isn't gonna work. It's not compelling. It doesn't feel good. And the game is a mess. You know, it's super poorly balanced. Some characters have like unblockable moves that do huge damage, while other characters have like basically no options. It's just a mess from design to development. It's not a good game.
Wasn't the plot basically like the Star Wars equivalent of Dead or Alive?
Sort of.
Where like the Emperor's like, you're gonna fight my martial arts master.
Yeah, it's basically like very much an Iron Fist tournament style thing, you know, which is what Tekken is all about, is the tournament of the Iron Fist or whatever. And funny enough, you know, Terrace Kasai in Finnish literally means steel hand. So I wonder where they got that idea. either way, you know, it's a mess. It's stupid, but I love it. I love playing it. I actually have two boxed copies of it because
Of course you do.
It's awful, but I have so much fun with it. And our last game here is one that, you know, I actually think is a good game overall, but we're giving it our worst Star Wars game badge of honor or dishonor, as the case may be, because it is ultimately a pretty big disappointment. This is Star Wars Battlefront, the 2015 new version. And I want to be clear, you know, when we talk about this game, I don't think it's a bad game. I know some of our listeners do, but I want to make it clear, the fundamental game, like the gameplay loop, I think is good. I think that, you know, the way that the controls handle, the way that, you know, the vehicles handle, the way that player characters handle and their abilities and everything, I think are all good. I think that overall that the game is fun. The problem is, you know, I was talking about how previous Battlefronts have so many gameplay options, cool ass single player modes, all of these different loadouts, you know, map counts in like the 20s and 30s. But the new one has like 6 maps and is multiplayer only. And, you know, it's online multiplayer consists of like the maximum of like 40 characters per match rather than 64. It has overall, I guess actually it comes out to 15 maps, which again, the fewest of any game in the series. It's just for like the revival of Battlefront as like a new game in the Battlefront series, it just is a failure. It's a flop in that regard. It's an absolute disappointment, and that makes me really sad because it's also, yeah, it needs to be said, one of the prettiest games I've ever seen. You know, a lot was made about how DICE Games, who made this, were building it with their Frostbite 3 engine, and you know, it is beautiful, but is that trade-off really worth the fact that it is the least content complete of any of the Battlefront games, and worse, that they have a ton of planned DLC content, which you can
season
get
pass
with a season pass that's like $40. When all is said and done, with that extra $40 is going to get you is ultimately the same amount of content that the old Battlefront games had.
Yeah.
It's bullshit. I'm sorry. You know, I definitely am supportive of DLC. I think DLC is cool. I think it gives you a lot of very neat options to expand a game. That is not what this is. This Battlefront does not feel like a complete game with the content it had at release, and that to me is unacceptable. So, like, what do you think about Battlefront New?
I mean, that's the exact reason why I have not picked it up. You know, maybe I will never pick it up unless there is like a collected edition with all the DLC somewhere down the line. But that's pretty much what your thoughts of it. I mean, I've watched you play it. I've played a level and such, and you know, it's not that the game is bad. It's just that it's unacceptable for a game in, you know, 2015, now 2016, to, you know, have that little content.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if it had been like a reduced price game, I wouldn't be so salty about it. If I had paid $30, $40 for this, I wouldn't feel so salty. But instead, I paid $60 for it, and I'm
so
disappointed.
You're basically just going to have paid $100 for a Battlefront game.
Yeah, well, I didn't buy the season pass. I'm not likely to. If I ever see it, like, season pass on sale on Xbox...
On Groupon.
On Groupon! I bought it on Xbox One. If I ever see it on the marketplace for, like, $15 on sale, all right, I'll buy that season pass for $15.
Hey, maybe being a gold member will get you lucky or something.
But I am fundamentally pissy about the fact that, you know, in my opinion, they have a solid base to build off of, but, like, no, they're really just gonna get the game to parity with the others for an extra $40. That's bullshit. I'm not super happy about that. So this is one of those things I could actually straight up rant about this because I am just, I'm mad about it. I'm mad about it. And that's why it gets our pick as worst Star Wars game.
Boo. Or no.
Slaggy, let's wrap this conversation up by just talking. If you could have any kind of Star Wars game, what would it be and who would make it?
Oh, man. I mean, I'd love to see a Platinum Games Star Wars game.
You bitch.
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, but go on.
And I mean, the natural place for me is that, you know, we haven't really seen anything tied to the, you know, we're talking about Lego Star Wars, no Episode 7. We really haven't seen anything Episode 7 yet, aside from, you know, Disney Infinity playsets and such.
Yeah, and there's a mobile social game.
Okay, but that doesn't count.
Galaxy at War, I think it's called.
That doesn't count. So, I mean, I would love to be, like, basically just playing a Bayonetta, but with Rey and, you know, being super fierce. It can be episodic. I mean, I think episodic really makes sense if it's going to be something following the new trilogy.
Now, see, I was going to say that I'd like to play a Platinum Games Star Wars game about, like, the adventures of, like, Jedi Master Luke Skywalker.
Oh, in between Episode 6 and 7?
Yeah, because, you know, he opened his school, but I'm sure there were some fights in there. And, you know, the game could... He's off on various planets, having his story adventures, and it could even end with him going into his self-exile. Not
spoilers,
talking about the reasons for
spoilers.
That. Bitch, it's not a spoiler. It's literally in the opening crawl that he's in exile. We're not talking about why he's in exile.
Okay, yeah.
So, I think you could do a lot with that.
Go ahead.
I think you could do a lot with that, but my other pick, since you kind of took that one, is that I would love to see a Shadows of the Empire JRPG made by, if, you know, I could have anyone make it, then I would have the Paper Mario guys make it, or no, even better, the Mario and Luigi RPG guys make it. Have, like, really cool, like, Alpha Dream, I think it is. Have them make, I could hear your typing going on. I'm sure you were about to go to Wiki so that you could answer. I'm pretty sure it's Alpha Dream. Make it so that you have, like, reactive input when you select your command attack. You know, and just, like, have do the whole, like, stats and text boxes for dialogue, and just, like, an old school, like, 16-bit style JRPG set in telling that story. I'd be super into.
My silly answer is a Finn and Poe dating sim visual novel.
Ah, I'm not surprised.
Come on, internet, get on that.
Yeah, get on that. All right, well, let's move on because we actually do have a rumor to discuss today.
But let's really quickly hit those social links.
Oh, that's a great idea.
We had some feedback from y'all about what your favorites or least favorites were in the Star Wars universe. Our social links question of the week was, this week we discussed Star Wars games. Have you played any? Which are your faves? Over on the Twitters, we got a tweet from Asymmetrical Homo saying KOTOR 1 and 2, aka the Mass Effect prequels. Yeah, I mean, Mass Effect really owes a lot to KOTOR.
No lies detected.
Must Love Games says KOTOR, obviously, but I also thought the pod racing game was good too. I'd be curious to know, Must Love Games, did you mean the console, the arcade, or both? Your Enzyme says Star Wars have some great games, KOTOR, Dark Forces, and Jedi Knight. That level design, Republic Commando, are all amazing.
Oh man, and you know, those are all fantastic games. I was not at the time like a PC gamer when like Dark Forces came out. I ended up having to play the PlayStation port, and that probably damaged my opinion of the game a little bit. But I think I have that all on Steam now. So.
Yeah, there's a lot available on Steam.
Oh yeah, a ton of them. Like pretty much all of those older games, I think, are.
Over on Facebook, we asked the bonus question, what were your least favorites? And Dan Diaz, Game Movie Superfan, said TIE Fighter is the best. Dark Forces is pretty good too. The new Battlefront is probably the worst I've played.
Aw, but not surprising.
That's true. The TIE Fighter, like, I have no experience with the TIE Fighter ones, but I hear a lot of people, knowing Dan Diaz and, like, what type of games he enjoys, that doesn't surprise me. I've heard a lot of positive reception for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I will pick up on the other social media points after we do a little bit more on our usuals.
All right. Well, then, we do have a rumor to discuss. Let's have at it.
Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it. Rumor has it.
So, we have another leak here regarding an upcoming Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. This is apparently going to be called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants in Manhattan. The game is apparently very far along in development because we already have beautiful leaked gameplay screens. This is kind of funny because you may recall last year there was a very similar leak just prior to E3 of Transformers Devastation, which turned out to be a beautiful cel-shaded game made by Platinum Games. Well, this is a beautiful cel-shaded Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game made by Platinum Games. So, if having a Platinum Games developed Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game sounds good to you, it looks like this is something that is gonna be happening sooner rather than later.
Oh man, I mean, the Ninja Turtles these days kind of could be questionable, you know, with the Michael Bay Turtles, but, I mean, put Platinum together with, like, I feel like it's like gonna be like that, you know, true turtle beat-em-up style that I'm totally here for it. The cell shading looks great. I mean, I'm just here for any sort of vintage turtles experience, which I mean, I think this will deliver on, because that's the somewhat similarly, Transformers could be the same, can be said of them, you know, Michael Bay fuckery, but still, you know, some good things happening. And if I recall, Transformers Devastation was pretty good in terms of like being throwback, you know, and appealing to, you know, original fans.
Yeah, it was a Generation 1 Transformers game. It was cool. I loved it.
So I bought two copies. Keep it up, Activision in Platinum.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm so stoked,
you know,
for
2016
this.
Still going to be the year of Platinum.
Yes, year of Platinum Take Two.
I feel like at the end of the decade, we're just going to say the decade of Platinum.
Decade of Platinum. I'm in. I'm cool with that. All right, well, with that having been said, let's hit our last segment of the day.
I said, hey, what's going on?
You do know we have a bumper for that, right?
I do, as a matter of fact. So, the first game I want to talk about here is Oxenfree.
Oh, man.
I played through Oxenfree the night it came out with Sidekick and Sulker at my sides. We ended up sitting through the entire thing that night, and oh boy, what an experience. Slaggy, in a spoiler-free way, why don't you talk up Oxenfree for me?
It is an adventure game, walking simulator, as you will. You know, so sort of in the vein-ish of, you know, like The Walking Dead sort of thing, but with a really cool cell shading sort of style.
Well, it's like a pixel art almost.
Yeah, almost like pixely art in a like future-y throwback way. Kind of platformy more than, you know, traversing a 3D space. With a supernatural horror elements.
Yeah, so the whole game plays out as like a horror mystery. You have some teens going onto a mysterious island for a party. Woo! Summertime! And you end up, horrific and mysterious things start happening, and ultimately the game is about resolving those and figuring out why this island appears to be haunted. But the game, more than that, is about development and of the relationships between the various characters, including a really innovative dialogue system where you'll end up with multiple choices of dialogue anytime characters are talking, and based on a button press, you will say a response at the moment you press the button, and in many cases all of the other characters will respond to whether you're interrupting someone or waiting your turn to make your statement,
or that you just didn't say anything.
But yeah, you're given time windows on these responses, and if you say nothing, they will also respond to your nothing. So the game ends up having a really interesting feeling because, you know, it feels a lot more participatory than a lot of these dialogue-based games. And, you know, it's a really cool experience. I ended up being really invested in the storyline. A lot of times I play these games and I don't really care about the mystery or whatever. But in this case, I found the story really compelling. I got really into it. And, you know, there's also a mechanic where you have a radio and you can tune into, like, the other entities on the island. The game uses some feedback techniques to tell you when is appropriate to use it, and it's just really messed up, and it gets pretty intense. So yeah. It's definitely, to me,
and there's more than meets the eye in terms of like real world connections to it.
Yeah.
So,
but please don't spoil Slaggy, because again, you know, to me, the less you know about Oxenfree when you jump in, the better. But I would call it 2016's first must play.
Yeah, possible GOTY candidate this early on.
I don't even think possible. I think if there are 10 games better than Oxenfree this year,
then it's going to be the
2016 is going to be the best year of gaming. Yeah, because seriously. Yeah,
but you know, all I meant is that, you know, it's already gearing up for like kind of a multimedia franchise in a way.
Absolutely, and though the game is strong enough. Yeah, the game is strong enough to support that. Let's see, the other big game I played this week was Diablo 3.
Yes,
this was the console version, which is my first real like proper experience with Diablo 3 on consoles. We've talked here on the show about it, you know, all the things Blizzard was doing to give it its own feel from the PC version to make a cohesive, fun console experience. I'm happy to report, you know, they absolutely succeeded.
Oh, it's so good.
Over the weekend, this weekend, in fact, I ended up putting in about 5 hours with Slagkick and Sulker doing same screen co-op multiplayer, and it was just a really phenomenal experience. Had a ton of fun doing all of the dungeon diving. The story and setting obviously haven't changed from the PC version, but, you know, by turning it into more of an action adventure game, you know, there's the whole dash button that we've talked about that lets you like do like a dodge roll at any time in any direction. Having your attacks be tied to buttons that you press rather than like point and click and hold the mouse button or whatever. It just ends up feeling a lot tighter, a lot more fun, a lot more. Again, you feel like your character, you have more agency, and it just ends up, to me,
that's
being
a great way to put it,
a way more fun and interactive experience, even though it is fundamentally still the same game. Slaggy, did you have anything to say about Diablo 3 and then go into the games you played this week?
I mean, yeah, I would agree with you. I like how you said that it gives you a lot more agency. I mean, it felt more engaging to me too. You know, like that.
Right? Like you're interacting with the game more.
Yeah, I mean, and like, honestly, I mean, my first experience with Diablo was Diablo 3, and I liked it on PC. I played through it. We played through it together with a
other person.
Party. Yeah, yeah. So we played through the online multiplayer, you know, so I liked it as it was, but I, you know, and this is probably, you know, heresy for original Diablo fans, but I remember thinking the whole time, I really wish this was like a, you know, more like a controller button, not button masher, you know, but, you know, like what it ends up being. So this is like exactly what I had really kind of wanted out of Diablo. And, you know, I'm really excited to, you know, we were playing on your Xbox One, but I'm going to go probably pick it up after Payday. And, you know, I'm not going to play ahead on our route, but I'll probably roll, you know, a character to play on my own. And, you know, because it's definitely the Diablo.
Well, just don't burn your ass out on
it. I won't. I've got plenty that I need to catch up on and that I'm working on. So, you know, I'm just saying that it's really exactly the Diablo experience that I was looking for. So, there are things I've been playing. Not too much aside from that since our live 100th episode. I am going to be getting back into Final Fantasy 14. You know, starting to have a little bit more free time on my hands. So definitely looking forward to that. But
oh yeah, I resubbed to that this week.
You did, yeah. So anything to share about that or just kind
no,
of...
No, I didn't really get, like, I didn't really do anything super interesting
yet. Any good crackpot winnings or...
Nope. Just right, really then, yeah. Getting my feet back in.
Yeah, so I might actually resub to that tonight after I do some food shopping and such. So
okay, cool.
Yeah, but nothing really aside from, you know, of course, more Smash. Really starting to kind of hone in on who I want to, you know, more seriously develop. And I think Bowser might be kind of who I'm leaning towards as my main, not even for internet daddy reasons. Like, Bowser is just, you know, a character that really works for me in a variety of matchups. And surprisingly, I didn't realize because we went in and looked at the stats and saw, like, which ones we won most with. And I guess my Captain Falcon is actually okay, which the interesting thing is that ever since the original Smash Brothers, I always picked Falcon because I never considered myself any good at Smash until really with Smash 4, until I've started to play against you. And so it's kind of interesting that, like, oh, I guess I kind of am okay with Captain Falcon. So I, you know, I'm kind of trying to focus on Bowser, Captain Falcon, and Peach are kind of the three that I, you know, keep coming back to in terms of, like, my main character. So
oh, excellent, that's great. Yeah. All right, do you have anything else you played this week?
Nope.
All right, well then let's start up the wind down. You want to bring those social links back?
Yeah, so let me give you some tweets. But first, before I do that, we love your feedback or your reviews or anything like that, your subscriptions. We are on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We like Facebook, and we effing love Twitter.
Effing love Twitter.
And everything is available on our home base, GameBuoy.org.
GameBuoy.org.
And you can mail us at any time at MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
MailBuoy@GameBuoy.org.
We've got a couple of Twitters on the twit log to catch up on, and most of these tying into our 100th episode, which we're very happy that, even if you weren't there live, that we really appreciate your support. We're very touched. Lil Daddy's Pizza had said, oh damn, I'm tuning in at literally the very end. It's okay, we're still glad that you graced us with your presence.
Yeah, thank you so much for popping in.
La Palanca Podcast, part of our hunting bunch, saying congratulations to GameBuoy.org, who just finished recording their 100th episode live. E-hugs for all. And a really cute emoji.
Aww.
Thank you, La Palanca. We love you. Te amo. Your Enzyme saying, what a great year 2015 was. Congrats on 100 episodes. Aw, thank you, Your Enzyme. That Retro Code saying, I didn't know about this. Congrats, Game Booey, on 100 episodes and hope to hear more. And a little bit of a side conversation. Gamer Fox saying, I've only heard good things about Little Daddy's Pizza's Mario Maker levels, especially from GameBuoy.org. So go play them right now.
OMG. Play them if you haven't. And hopefully they haven't been deleted.
Oh, I'm sure they haven't because they're fantastic. Little Daddy's Pizza replying, I need to get back into it, but that means editing my levels for checkpoints and conditional power-ups. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of been my thing. Do I go back and remake them or whatever? Back to the 100th episode celebration. Gamer Fox said, listening to GameBuoy.org's latest episode 100. Thanks again, Spike Point and Sidekick, for enriching my workday with VG goodness.
Aww. Thank you for listening. We really appreciate
it. I'll try to make it to a live episode one day. Heart emoji. Actual emoji, not saying the words heart emoji.
Aw.
Act Deft saying, kind of late on this, but congrats to Spike Point and Sidekick on their 100th episode of Game Buoy. Let's get to 500. Well, gosh, I guess we got to do that now, right? We even tweeted kind of that at him, and he said, well, 200 seems closer and probably more plausible. Hashtag 100 at a time. So what we sure hope so. We love doing this. We got a tweet from Sky, aka Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio and the Voice of Geeks Network. Saying, at Ranger Pridecast, at GameBuoy.org, at RIF Podcast, is Spike Point tried to outdo me at being a podcast whore? Oh my.
And this is actually, you know, this is a perfect time for me to stop for a moment and mention my new endeavor. I'm really, really excited about this. Many of you out there are familiar with Shane Alenko on Twitter. He's previously popped up on several shows over on Vogue Network. He popped up on Reading is Fundamental and was, in fact, one of the hosts of Reading is Fundamental for a while, I believe.
Yeah, producer Shane.
Yeah, yeah. So he and I, you know, we're both really into Power Rangers / Super Sentai, the tokusatsu shows from Japan, and we're doing a podcast about it. We have recorded 5 episodes so far. We're both really excited about it. It's going to be airing soon on a certain network that you could probably figure out, but I believe I was informed not to say it officially, so I won't. And just something really exciting. You can check out their Twitter, our Twitter, I should say, over at Ranger Pridecast. Again, that is at Ranger Pridecast. Yep. And, you know, it's just a show I'm really passionate about, really excited to do. And so far, and
you're doing a great job on it. And I was like, I thought we did shout it out, but that was over on Anime Buoy.
Yeah, we shouted it out on Anime Buoy last
first time
week.
For Game Buoy.
Yep. So,
one more tweet here. I'm sorry, forward. Dude, anything more to say about Ranger Pridecast?
Just that I hope anyone who has even a passing interest in tokusatsu shows gives it a chance.
And our last tweet, but certainly not least, is from Your Enzyme. It's a link to a blog over at SegaBits.com. And Your Enzyme says, "Ah, yes!" Because it is news that the game's music for Valkyria Azure Revolutions, the game music for Valkyria Azure Revolutions, is being done by none other than Yasunori Mitsuda-san.
Yes! I am so excited about this. I love Mitsuda-san's work. Obviously, I've said that like 100,000 times here on the show.
I mean, Valkyria Azure Revolutions already looked great as is, but yeah.
Yeah, and I love Mitsuda-san. Valkyria anyway, so it just all in all. Right? Just good news overall. All
right. Captain Spike, I think we need to start wrapping this up.
As ever and always, I'd like to shout out to VG Realness, serving up a weekly dose of gaming chit-chat among friends, as well as our good friends over at Orange Lounge Radio, where every gamer has a voice, and from whom I steal ever so many of my cues. We also have Nintendo Fun Club, your place for platformers, positivity, and pop punk, as well as Nintendo Love Fest, which does exactly what it says on the tin. We've also got Nintendo Love Fest's sister show, X Nation, an awesome podcast focusing on Marvel's Mighty Mutants. I'd be remiss not to mention your show, Slaggy, Reading is Fundamental, which we previously discussed, which, you know, is a seasonal show talking about the current season of RuPaul's Drag Race, featuring myself, Slaggy, obviously, Rob Roberts from Orange Lounge Radio, and Delvin from VG Realness. I have to think that'll be coming back soon, right? The new cast reveal is February 1.
Yep, and they're awesome. They keep saying spring 2016, so I'm guessing like a March date like we had last year.
You know, that'll make sense since we know there's going to be a new All-Star season. I wonder if they'll do them in like alternating seasons, so we'll only have like 3-month gaps between new content for a while.
Oh, I'd love that.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
We heard RuPaul is doing a game show now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard that.
So that'll be something fun to see, too.
Absolutely. The next one, of course, is Tables, Ladders, and Podcast, a professional wrestling podcast for the common man. You might be interested in that if you're watching Royal Rumble right now while we're recording this episode. And last but certainly not least is the Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, a Star Trek podcast you hope doesn't fail. Slaggy, can you take us a place?
I'm going to take you to a game bar.
Game bar!
Game bar is the gay video game Prairie Home Companion and a part of the Hunty Bunch, along with Koopa Club, which is an award-winning podcast about Nintendo and gaming with an LGBT twist, and Joystick Jockeys, two LGBTQ gamers who love games and love talking about
LGBTQ. Cuties.
You're right, seriously. And also La Palanca Podcast, por y para gay gamers latinoamericanos en español. And, you know, we also extend that Hunty Bunch love over to the Vogue Network, where you can check
out. We love you, Vogue Network.
We love you, Vogue Network. That's the Voice of Geeks Network at VogueNetwork.com. And you can hear such great shows like the previously mentioned OLR, Starboard Power Coupling Podcast, and Girls Gone Wow, where you can get a female perspective on the World of Warcraft and what's going on in Azeroth. And also,
unrelated to the Vogue Network, you should check out Anime Buoy.
I was like, oh yeah, wait, that's not on Vogue Network, but Anime Buoy is a show that we do about anime.
God, we should talk to the people that run Vogue about getting content there. Jesus.
Anime Buoy is your protocol for anime recommendations and discussions that maybe aren't on your radar, but most definitely should be. And as everyone always, our wonderful theme music was done by Zelda Reorchestrated.
Pouring out of 40.
Pouring out of 40 into the Great Fairy Fountain for that project that made beautiful Zelda symphonic realizations.
Awesome. All right. Well, unless you have anything else to say.
We are the Earth Intruders.
No, I was going to use that. For all of you out there in Internet Radio Land, I hope you have had half as much fun listening to us as we've had talking to you. It has been lovely to spend our Sunday afternoon this way. Unfortunately, we need to get going, but until next time, keep gaming, keep thinking, and we are the Earth Intruders. We are the Sharpshooters.
And may the Force be with you.
Ow, 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 ow. I'm checking my mic. Mic check, mic check.
Mic check, mic check, mic check, mic check.
We're already perfect. Are you ready to go?
Yep.
Mics are hot.
Hey, Magic Mike. Yeah, so in some news that kind of shocked the internet, one of our most favorite companies has lost one of its, I say lost, but not like forever, like he didn't pass away, but David Gator from, you know, the most...
wah, wah.